actors. And so there's this, you know, Palestinian family acting dynasty. And as I was casting this intergenerational portrait, it was my dream to really cast an actual family in these roles. Working with Muhammad was just amazing. I mean, he's so disciplined. He's so rigorous. He's so committed. He has more integrity than anyone I've ever met. And he just was so there and present and you know, the kind of actor who, you know, I would call cut and he would say, no, let's do it again. Let's do it again. I can do better. Just always really striving to kind of be his best. And you can see that in his work and the immense depth and nuance and humanity and humor that he brings to the film. You know, I'm so happy that he actually got to tap into that, that talent of his, because, you know, he hadn't gotten to do a lot of comedy. He did come to our European premiere where he saw the film for the very first time this summer, and he just was so proud of the film.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation. We want folks to go to democracynow.org to see it. Shireen Diabas, Palestinian-American director, producer, screenwriter, actress. Her feature film, All That's Left of You, has been shortlisted for an Oscar. It's opening around the country. It's in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco now. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end of year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots independent community radio.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Drinking for Puddles, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Donald Trump introduces a long-delayed health care plan.
The U.S. Department of Education investigates Vancouver Public Schools because of policies involving trans athletes.
And in international news, an Iranian cleric puts forward some fiery rhetoric, including a call for the death penalty for protesters.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 16th, 2026. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Sam Bowman. The U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights has announced it is investigating Vancouver Public Schools for permitting transgender students to compete in school sports. The federal Title IX investigation involves 18 school districts across the country, including four in Washington State. It involves a variety of colleges and state departments of education from kindergarten districts on up. Spokesperson Jessica Roberts says they received notice of the investigation on Wednesday. Roberts wrote, quote, "We are reviewing the allegations, but are unable to provide further comment while the investigation is pending," end quote. According to a statement from the U.S. Department of Education, the groups being scrutinized, quote, "maintain policies or practices that discriminate on the basis of sex by permitting students to participate in sports based on their gender identity, not biological sex," end quote. It added the comment that those policies put the safety and equal opportunities of women in educational programs and activities at risk. This comes at a time when the Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments in two cases involving state laws banning transgender girls and women from competing in sports at publicly funded schools. Oregon has not been immune from similar problems. Title IX investigations into Portland Public Schools and the Oregon Department of Education were initiated last year after a transgender high school athlete won first place in a Portland meet. Federal funds that these institutions receive could be cut if they are found in violation of Title IX. The U.S. Department of Education did not respond to requests for comment on the status of the investigations.
Donald Trump just announced the outlines of a new health care plan. Republicans have been facing mounting pressure to address rising health costs after they let subsidies expire. One main component is a proposal to send money directly to Americans for health savings accounts so they can buy their own health care, including insurance and other health-related services. Democrats have already suggested that idea is a very poor substitute for the tax credits, which can actually help lower monthly premiums. The Trump plan also focuses on lowering drug prices and requiring insurers to be more upfront with the public about costs, rejecting claims, and wait times for care. Trump has long been criticized for his lack of a comprehensive health care plan, even as he and Republicans attacked former President Barack Obama's Affordable Health Care Act, known as Obamacare. Trump tried and failed during his first term to repeal and replace the law when he ran for president in 2024. Trump said he had only concepts of a plan to address health care. Dr. Mehmet Oz, administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, told reporters, "We have a, quote, framework that we believe will help Congress create legislation," unquote. Apparently, the administration has been discussing the idea with potential allies in Congress, but no lawmakers working on the plan have been identified. Trump has not offered any details about how much money he envisions being sent to consumers to shop for insurance, or whether the money would be available to all Obamacare enrollees versus just those with lower tier and catastrophic plans. Democrats already rejected a similar proposal last year. They said the accounts would not be enough to cover costs for most consumers. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was asked yesterday whether Trump would guarantee that under his plan, people would be able to cover their health costs. She did not answer, but instead said, quote, "If this plan is put in place, every single American who has health care in the United States will see lower costs as a result," end quote. Trump's proposal comes after the Republicans' big tax and spending bill last year cut more than $1 trillion in federal health care and food assistance.
In national news, Trump threatens to invoke the Insurrection Act in Minnesota. An ICE leader may run for Congress, and fewer than one in five Americans support the so-called taking of Greenland through military action. With those stories and more, it's Zamon Perez with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The president's Truth Social post spoke very loud and clear to Democrats across this country, elected officials who are encouraging left-wing agitators to unlawfully obstruct legitimate law enforcement operations.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt is defending President Donald Trump's threat to invoke the Insurrection Act, saying multiple past presidents have done so. Trump threatened to invoke the 1807 law, meant to use military personnel to restore civil order, following a second shooting by an ICE officer in Minneapolis. Traditionally, presidents invoke the law at the request of governors or mayors. President John Kennedy used it to enforce court-ordered desegregation. President Bill Clinton used it when called on by the governor of California during riots after the beating of Rodney King. Ryan LaRochelle at the University of Maine says sending troops over the objections of local officials would escalate the conflict and would quickly be challenged in court.
What we're seeing here, again, is a dramatic break from precedent to use the Insurrection Act to stomp down on lawful protests, and is quite worrisome to me.
The shooting of a Venezuelan migrant in the leg has further inflamed the nationwide protests that followed the killing of Renee Nicole Good. Minnesotans are also objecting to the aggressive ICE tactics in local government meetings. Birgit Johnson now lives in Richfield, Minnesota. She told the city council there that the local police should not cooperate with ICE and says the mass immigration raids remind her of the Nazi history of her native Germany.
What I have been seeing lately is immigration enforcement that has adopted a military look and operation style that imposes warlike methods on the people.
ICE Deputy Director Madison Shahan is running for Congress, challenging Marcy Kaptur in her Northwest Ohio district. Kaptur is the longest-serving woman in the House and has staved off multiple challenges by Trump-endorsed candidates. Keegan Zimmerman with the Kaptur campaign says her constituents know and approve of her record, even as Ohio lawmakers drew the district's lines to favor the GOP.
While Republicans from near and far will fight through a messy primary in this district, they gerrymandered again just this fall.
A Reuters poll found only 17% of Americans support taking Greenland, and just 4% support using military force to do it. As Trump continues to threaten annexation of the Danish territory, several Senate Republicans say they might move to block that, and they'll meet with NATO allies to reassure them. Federal courts yesterday delivered major wins for advocates of voter privacy. Two federal judges struck down attempts by the White House to access private voter registration data from Oregon and California. A new Texas Senate Democratic primary poll finds State Representative James Tallarico ahead of Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett by 9 points. Tallarico, a Presbyterian seminary student, saw his star rise in the party with his faith-based progressive politics, while Crockett built a large social media following in part by voicing disdain for Trump. I'm Zimon Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Donald Trump is now calling for the Great Healthcare Plan. It excludes persons with pre-existing conditions. Brett Pivetto tells us more from Texas.
The White House has outlined a new health care plan just as Texans are facing steep increases in Affordable Care Act premiums. What the administration is calling the Great Health Care Plan proposes, among other things, to replace insurance company subsidies with direct payments to consumers, presumably through health savings accounts. However, the plan is dependent on legislative action. Yvette Fontenot, CEO of Health Impact Policy Partners, says Congress is currently focused on other things.
The House has just passed a 3-year clean extension of the enhanced premium tax credits that has been sent over to the Senate. So that's what Congress is focused on getting done. Some of these other pieces, while they may be considered by Congress, it is not the healthcare emergency that Congress is currently trying to deal with.
She says the plan doesn't address the immediate problem for millions of people who are facing a doubling of their health insurance premiums on the ACA marketplace. The administration claims its plan would save taxpayers over $36 billion and reduce ACA policy premiums by more than 10%. The proposal would require plain language insurance information, public disclosure of insurer and provider pricing, and calls for ending kickbacks from pharmacy benefit managers to brokerage middlemen. The plan also calls for lowering drug costs by benchmarking prices in other countries and making more prescription drugs available over the counter. Fontenot says there's a better way to lower drug prices.
I think the best way to deliver price reductions on drugs is what Democrats passed as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, which is allowing Medicare to use its overwhelming purchasing ability to negotiate prices with drug companies. And those are the lower prices that are being delivered as of January 1.
She says it's hard to say if the administration's proposal would lower prices without seeing specifics. For Texas News Service, I'm Brett Pivetto.
AI is growing. Apparently, so is the adverse way in which it affects black and brown workers. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
As artificial intelligence grows, concerns about the impact on communities of color is also increasing. Experts say AI will disproportionately impact black and brown workers through displacement and the environmental burden of data centers, which are more likely to be located in marginalized communities. North Carolina has at least 90 data centers, according to Data Center Map. Keisha Bross, director of the NAACP's Center for Opportunity, Race, and Justice, says black workers are overrepresented in entry-level jobs, as well as manufacturing and logistics work.
In the artificial intelligence space, a lot of these jobs that are usually taken within the South in these big manufacturing sites and e-commerce logistics sites, they're going to be replaced in the future.
Bross underscores that it's still unclear exactly where and how AI will displace workers. Data centers have also been linked to health impacts for communities that live near them. Bross says black communities already face higher unemployment rates. Black unemployment was at 7.5% in December, compared with 4.4% for the overall population. To ensure black workers have a place in the new AI economy, she says workers need affordable access to education.
The best thing that these companies can do is really provide educational tools and resources, because we don't want people displaced from the workforce. We want people to be back in the workforce, but also earning a wage that's livable.
Bross says the Trump administration's fight against diversity, equity, and inclusion has hurt people of color. She believes it's still important for companies to commit to diverse hiring practices because representation matters, and a diverse workforce will make their companies more successful in the long run.
We have to embrace technology, and we have to embrace artificial intelligence, but we also have to have oversight, and we have to have governance in order to make sure that it's not discriminatory and that we're not implementing technologies that are going to hurt populations of people.
For North Carolina News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines by FAIR, the National Media Watchdog Group. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it'll be Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be fair skies, and the low will be around 38. Tomorrow's weather calls for sunshine with a high of about 50 degrees. Today in history, in 1919, Nebraska became the 36th state to approve the 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution. That was the necessary three-quarters of the states needed to approve the amendment known as Prohibition being canceled. It was constitutionally mandated in the United States 1 year later in 1920, and Prohibition was done. The quote of the day is from American social commentator Will Rogers. Rogers said, "Why don't they pass a constitutional amendment prohibiting anybody from learning anything? If it works as well as Prohibition did, in 5 years, Americans would be the smartest race of people on earth."
A senior hardline cleric in Iran just called for the death penalty for detained demonstrators recently involved in protests against the regime. He also made direct threats against U.S. President Donald Trump. There have already been harsh efforts at repressing the demonstrations, which have left several thousand people dead. The demonstrations, which began at the end of December, seem to arise because of Iran's failing economy. They've evolved into protests directly challenging the country's theocracy. Ayatollah Ahmad Khatami's sermon, carried by Iranian state radio, sparked remarks from those gathered for prayers, including, quote, "armed hypocrites should be put to death," end quote. Executions and extrajudicial killings of protesters are two reasons Trump outlined possible military action against Iran. Khatami described the protesters as the butlers of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as Trump's soldiers. He said their plans, quote, "imagine disintegrating the country," end quote. Khatami added, quote, "they should wait for hard revenge from the system. Americans and Zionists should not expect peace," end quote. Khatami has long been known for his hardline views. He previously said that a fatwa calling for the death of writer Salman Rushdie should remain in effect. He has also threatened Israel in a speech, saying Iran could, quote, "raise Tel Aviv and Haifa to the ground with its missile arsenal," end quote. The latest came as allies of Iran and the United States sought to defuse tensions. In Russia, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, quote, "the situation in the region is quite tense, and the Russian president is continuing his efforts to help de-escalate it," end quote. Trump previously pledged, quote, "help is on its way," for the protesters, but the prospect of imminent U.S. retaliation appears to have resolved. Officials from Egypt, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar reportedly raised concerns with Trump that a U.S. military intervention would roil the global economy and destabilize an already volatile region. Yesterday, Iran and the U.S. traded angry accusations at a session of the United Nations Security Council. U.S. Ambassador Mike Waltz said that Trump, quote, "has made it clear that all options are on the table to stop the slaughter," end quote. The deputy Iranian ambassador to the U.N. attacked the U.S. for what he called direct American involvement in leading unrest in Iran to violence. Even as protests appeared to have dwindled inside Iran, thousands of exiled Iranians have taken to the streets and cities across Europe to protest the government of the Islamic Republic. The death toll, approaching 3,000 people, exceeds that of any other Iranian protest for decades. The Iranian government has not itself provided casualty figures.
Polling poorly is nothing new to the Trump administration, but nearly a year into his second term, even Trump's own party is no longer blindly supportive of him or his policies, especially the economic ones. A new poll from the Associated Press Center for Public Affairs Research found that just 16% of Republicans say Trump has helped a lot in addressing the cost of living. That is down from 49% in a poll from April of last year. Poll respondents seemed bothered by the weak economy, perhaps because of Trump's core campaign promise to reduce costs. Prices on many goods are higher than they were when he took office last January, even as inflation cools down. There is little sign, though, that the Republican base is abandoning Trump. The vast majority of Republicans, some 8 in 10, approve of his job performance, compared with 4 in 10 for U.S. adults overall. One poll respondent, John Candela, said, quote, "Don't like the man as a human being. I don't like his brashness. I don't like his roughness. I don't like how he types out his texts, all capital, as if he's yelling at everybody. But what I approve of is what he's doing to try to get the country on track," end quote. 79% of Republicans said he helped address the cost of living at least a little in his first term. Now, just 40% of Republicans in the new poll feel the same way. Just over half say Trump has helped create jobs in his second term. 85% said the same about his first term, including 62% who said he helped a lot. About 33% of Republicans say Trump has helped address health care costs at least a little versus 53% in the 2024 poll. Immigration remains a strength among the Trump base, despite concerns over the tactics he's used. That approval has fallen 12% over the last year. About 80% of Republicans say that Trump has helped at least a little bit on immigration and border security this time around. That's similar to the 2024 poll. Several Republicans said in interviews they thought the aggressive tactics in Minnesota, including the alleged murder of Mother Renee Good, went too far. Some suggested Trump should focus more on immigrants with criminal backgrounds, as he promised during the campaign. Overall, just 38% of U.S. adults approve of Trump's leadership on immigration, while 61% disapprove. About two-thirds of Republicans say the country as a whole is much or at least somewhat better off than before Trump took office, but only about half say this about themselves and their family. The broad sense that the country is moving in the right direction may be counteracting Republican dissatisfaction with the state of the economy. Many also did not like Trump's personality or character, using labels like arrogant. The poll, it included 1,203 adults, and it was designed to be representative of the U.S. population. It included interviews with 404 Republicans.
Healthcare workers came together in California's capital, incensed by the more than $1 trillion in cuts to the state's Medicaid system, Medi-Cal. Suzanne Potter has more.
This week, dozens of healthcare advocates rallied in Sacramento, asking lawmakers to find ways to shield Californians from massive federal cuts to Medi-Cal. Republicans passed a huge budget bill called H.R. 1 last summer, which cut $1 trillion from Medicaid nationwide. Assemblymember Mia Bonta is chair of the State Assembly Health Committee.
It means over $30 billion every single year have been ripped out of the hands of Medi-Cal recipients. 3.4 million Californians.
Republicans defended the cuts as necessary to fund other administration priorities, including tax cuts and increased immigration enforcement. Governor Gavin Newsom's January budget proposal continues limits on Medi-Cal for undocumented people and some lawfully present immigrants, while adding some additional restrictions to immigrant care. Lawmakers start negotiating the state budget next week. Amanda McAllister-Wallner, executive director of the nonprofit Health Access, says lawmakers should raise revenue from big companies in order to mitigate the worst federal cuts.
H.R. 1 wasn't only a cut to health care, it was the largest redistribution of wealth in American history. Cutting services for the most vulnerable in order to put money in the pockets of the richest Americans and most profitable corporations, many of whom live and do business right here in California.
Rachel Lynn Gish, also with Health Access, says there are things California can do to ease HR1's work reporting requirements and eligibility checks, calling them burdens designed to force people off of Medi-Cal. However, she adds, those charges alone won't keep many Californians from falling off care.
We are on the precipice of a huge public health crisis if our state does not take action. It will be in the state budget that these decisions about whether to cut our care or protect our care are going to be made.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, is meeting with leaders in China. Before he left, he visited British Columbia to talk to the people of the coastal First Nations. The discussion, largely about energy exports, was influenced by the natives' strong opposition to a new Canadian pipeline. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney is in China for the first visit by a Canadian leader in almost a decade. Already, he signed a memorandum of understanding with Beijing that could result in more Canadian oil and gas exported to China. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, before he left, Carney met with coastal First Nations in British Columbia to discuss his energy export plans.
The meeting was held in Prince Rupert, and on the agenda, as expected, Ottawa's major projects. The coastal First Nations, made up of 9 First Nations, try to ensure that they have a say in how resources and waters are managed. They also work to protect the Great Bear Rainforest and the British Columbia coastline, and they have strongly opposed the idea of a new pipeline or the end of a ban on the moratorium on oil tankers. Both are major components of Ottawa's plans to diversify Canada's trade in energy and move away from dependency on the U.S., especially now in the era of uncertainty caused by President Donald Trump. But coastal First Nations remain opposed to any new pipeline to the BC coast. Carney played down expectations, saying that the meeting was more about dialogue to explore ways they could work together. But the coastal chiefs are not budging on their opposition, according to the group's president, Marilyn Slett.
We reiterated that there is no technology that can clean up an oil spill at sea, and that it would take just one spill to destroy our way of life. We shared our reliance on a healthy and intact ocean and our determination to protect the ocean and the ecosystem that we rely upon.
Without their support, Carney's government appears to be in a lose-lose situation. Coastal chiefs say they will use every tool available to stop construction if Ottawa pushes ahead with the North Coast pipeline. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The holidays may be over, but Alaskans across the state recently celebrated Russian Orthodox Christmas and New Year, a celebration in Anchorage brought together people who could not celebrate with their families or in church. Ayolna Niden has more.
Singers in kasbaks and headscarves chant Christmas hymns in English, Yupik, Russian, and Church Slavonic. Next to them, 3 young men spin sparkling pinwheel-shaped stars on wooden poles, each with an Orthodox icon of a nativity scene in the center.
Christ is born.
Lord,
the group is gathered for a Russian Christmas celebration hosted by the Alaska Native Medical Center at their primary care clinic. The singers are from St. Innocent Russian Orthodox Cathedral Choir in Anchorage, though most of them are originally from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Alaska Orthodox Archbishop Alexei was a part of the opening of Staring, or Slavic, a custom, he says, originated in the Carpathian Mountains in Eastern Europe.
Beautiful tradition that has been in Alaska for over 100 years.
Akalena Patricia Lekanov-Gregory is from Alaska and grew up singing hymns in Aleut and Russian. Her family always gathered around Slavic to decorate stars for the celebration. Gregory says she wants to pass down the tradition to the next generation.
Because it's our history. You know, it's been going, coming over all the way from Ukraine, from Russia, and still being sung today.
The best part of the night for Gregory is having a big feast, sometimes until 2 a.m. And she loves it when the songs make people move. She remembers one song from her childhood that shifted between fast and slow tempo.
You could see the people kind of dance or move to it. Not supposed to dance in church, right? But this song they always did, all the elders.
Gregory says she was happy to attend Slavic at the primary care center to bring comfort and healing to patients. I am Alona Niden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A New York City training program does far more than simply teach skills. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A program in New York City is helping train people for jobs in energy efficiency and changing their lives.
It gives people hope, and it gives people opportunity that they might not feel like they had.
Munir Smith graduated from the nonprofit Stacks and Jules Building Automation Training Program. It's run in partnership with Henry Street Settlement, a social service agency on Manhattan's Lower East Side. Trainees learn how to install and operate technology that automates a building's lights and HVAC equipment, which can save a lot of energy. Michael Conway, co-founder of Stacks and Jules, says the program goes beyond teaching skills. It also provides comprehensive support to students, some of whom struggle with poverty or homelessness.
If housing comes up, there's access to support there. If there's food or nutritional requirements, if there's transportation, if they need eyeglasses, if they need, you know, clothes that are appropriate for interviews.
So by helping trainees overcome barriers, the program provides a path to well-paying careers in energy efficiency.
And so, you know, I'm always looking at my classmates achieve great things. So it's a proud fraternity to be in.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 16th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Zamon Perez, Eric Takeoff, Suzanne Potter, Brett Pevedo, and Dr.